Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 26 today. It's the second time that David uniquely spares Saul's life. It is very similar to chapters 23:19 through 24:22. The same people are going to inform on David. Saul's going to say some similar things. David's going to say some similar things. There's a lot of similarities. There's also a lot of divergences. I personally don't like the concept that this is one account dealt with two different ways. That's possible, but I think it's two different accounts. There's two different geographical locations. The response that Saul has to David, though similar in its introductory formula, is very different. And I just think it's two different accounts. It just happened that the same people are going to tattle on David twice, and they're Judeans too. Chapter 26, verse 1. Then the Ziphites, of course, residents of Judah, just they did the same thing back in 23:19, came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is not David," of course the root there means to love or beloved, "hiding on the hill of Hakalah?" Now, we don't know exactly where that is, which is before Jeshimon. Now, this is in the wilderness of Judea, very dry area down south of Jerusalem. It's the later site, by the way, this Jeshimon, of the famous Qumran community, which the Dead Sea Scrolls come from. I think that's interesting. "And Saul rose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having with him 3,000 chosen men." That's exactly what he had back in chapter 24, verse 2. Now, again, the word thousand can mean a tribal group, a military group, or a little literal thousand. Did he have 3,000 standing army troops? And that's been the question. This seems to be his bodyguard. Whether it was a full 3,000 or these military units that have been smaller than 3,000 in number, we're just not sure. But this was his standing army. They were always available. He had to muster anybody. He had these men available. "To search for David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul camped at the hill of Hakalah, which is before Jeshimon, beside the road, and David was staying in the wilderness, when he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David sent out spies, and he knew that Saul was definitely coming." I think David was really surprised that Saul was still after him. I think he sent out spies to say, "Is he looking for me? Is he on some kind of other campaign? Is he just passing through?" They said, "No, David. He's coming up here. He looks like he's after you." I think Saul's astonishing comment to David in chapter 24, verses 16 through 22, that he knew that David was going to be the next king of Israel. That's what God wanted. And now he's hunting him again. The only way we can explain this is this paranoia, this mental illness of Saul. "David then arose and came to the place where Saul had camped. And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner, son of Ner, commander of his army, was lying next to Saul." Now, of course, this would be the camp, and David was up in the mountain, apparently could see it clearly. And the people were camped around him. "And David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite." And we know of two Hittites in David's army. One is Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, and this man here. We know nothing else about Ahimelech anywhere else. But this shows that there were foreign people in David's army. Matter of fact, now the Hittites, there are three groups of Hittites in the Bible. One in the Mesopotamian area, Fertile Crescent, or the large empire in central Turkey, we would say, and some group in Palestine. Now whether the group in Palestine was an offshoot of the one in Turkey or the one in Mesopotamia, we're not sure, but here were two men of that group. "And to Abishai, the son of Zariah, Joab's brother." Now, this means that that Joab and this guy are related, and apparently they're related to David. Listen to this. We know this man's a warrior from 2 Samuel 23:18. We also know that he is the son of David's sister. So you might want to see 2 Samuel 17:25 and compare that with 1 Chronicles 2:16. So these are close relatives. There's three of these brothers, and all of them are very outstanding warriors, and Joab even become commander of David's army. And Abishai said, "I will go down with you." Ahimelech wanted nothing to do with this. It just kind of reminds you of what Gideon did when he went down into the camp of the Midianites and God confirmed him. This kind of same kind of thing. And David said to Abishai, came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping inside the circle of the camp with his spear stuck in the ground at his head. Now, the significance of that is that this spear seems to be a symbol of his royal position. You might want to see 19:9, 22:6, 2 Samuel 1:6, and it's mentioned again in chapter 26:22. Others say this spear may have brought back connotations of Saul trying to kill David. It's with this spear that he tried to do it, and that's found in 18:10 and 11 and 19:19 and 20. So this spear had some connotations. You know, even in today, the Bedouin tribes, you can tell which tent is of the Bedouin leader by a spear stuck in the ground by that tent. And so it's obviously something very common in the ancient Near East. And Abishai said to David, now look at verse 8 if you would. Today God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Now this is very similar to what was said to David by his companions back in chapter 24, verse 4, about killing Saul in the cave. These men thought it was God's will that David take advantage of the situation and kill Saul. Now that just shows they didn't know what God's will was. They're using God's name. They think they're saying good religious advice, but the truth is they're kind of acting like Peter did to Christ in Matthew chapter 16. They're not saying what God wants. David seems to be confirming the fact that he will not raise his hand against God's anointed. And here's some of his inner circle encouraging him to kill Saul and claiming it's the Lord's will. But David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hands against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt? Go back to chapter 24, 6 and 7, the same thing he said to this same suggestion then. Listen to what David says in verse 10. And David also said, as the Lord lives. Now this oath has been used over and over in the historical books. I think it goes back to the covenant name for God, Yahweh, which is the word Lord in all caps you see in this verse. It's from the Hebrew verb to be. Now we'll see Exodus 3:14, I am that I am. And it means I'm the ever-living, only living God. Now there are either one or two ways to take this. Either he's saying God's going to kill him one of two ways, or he's saying there's one of three ways his death's going to happen. Here it is. Surely the Lord will strike him. That's one possibility. Number two, his day will come that he dies. He'll die a natural death. Or number three, he will go down to battle and perish. And that's exactly what he does in chapter 31, 3 through 6. Now, some interpreters say the Lord's going to do this in two ways. Others say David's maybe given three options. God's going to do it in a supernatural way. He's just going to grow old and die, or he's going to die in battle. I think the three, because the construction in Hebrew seems to have the conjunction or here. Verse 11, the Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. This very same thing was said in chapter 24, verse 6 and verse 12. The Lord forbid. But now please take the spear at his head and the jug of water. Now he wanted to take a special sign to show Saul that he had the ability to kill him, but he did not. Now, I guess there were no guards on duty, or the guards had fallen asleep, because we're going to learn down here in verse 12 that this was a supernatural kind of sleep from the Lord. Let's look. So David took the spear and the jug of water from beside Saul's head, and they went away. And look, here's three things. Number one, no one saw. Number two, no one knew it. And number three, no one did awake. So they were all asleep. Look at this. Because a sound sleep, or intense sleep, from the Lord had fallen on them. My goodness. Now remember earlier, back in chapter 19, David was delivered from Saul by the prophets. The prophets, when somebody came, he sent two different groups, and they both prophesied, and David got away. Saul finally went himself, and David prophesied with the prophets. Find that back in 19:23 through 24. And so God delivered him through him getting caught up in this worship, ecstatic worship again. Here God delivers him by this supernatural sleep. Notice it's a natural kind of thing. It's not supernatural in the sense of what happened. They went to sleep. But the timing and intensity seem to be supernatural. So David crossed over the other side and stood on top of the mountain at a distance with a large area between them. Now I want to say, although the Lord caused a supernatural sleep to fall upon the camp, that didn't mean that David could holler in Saul's ear and stay in the camp. He got a long way away before he hollered to Saul. Now, there's something of prudence in there. I think we can test the Lord's provision sometime. And David didn't do that. I think he was grateful that God supernaturally called his sleep, although David didn't know it was God that caused that supernatural sleep, I don't think, then. So he gets a long way away before he hollers and wakes them up. And don't take advantage, I guess, of God's provision and care, is what I'm trying to say. Then David called to the people and to Abner, the son of Ner, saying... Now, there's a play on the word called in verse 14. At the end of verse 14, Abner says, who is the one who calls? Already it's the word caller. And then down here in verse 20 is the word partridge. And the word partridge means the caller. And I think there's a real play on that word partridge. And when I get to verse 20, I'll deal with it. But why does David call to Abner? Well, Abner, of course, was Saul's uncle. We'll see chapter 14, 50 and 51. Why call to Abner and not call to Saul? Well, David is going to kind of say something ironical to Abner. He's going to say, Abner, you're a great military person. There's no one like you in all of Israel, but you should have guarded the king better. You ought to be ashamed. You deserve to die for not guarding the king. Now, the whole thrust of this is, Abner, you have all kind of military skills. You're a very conscientious person. We know you love your relative. But even you, Abner, with all of your giftedness, couldn't protect Saul, because God's against Saul, Abner, and God's with me. Now, that's what the thrust of this seems to be. And that's what David says in verse 15. When he says, who is like you in all of Israel? You might want to see 2 Samuel 3, 31 through 38, kind of a benediction to his life. Abner will be killed by Joab because Abner kills one of these three brothers. So Abner will get revenge. And this thing, verse 16. And this thing that you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, all of you must surely die. So what does that mean? Well, because they didn't take care of Saul. Because you did not guard your Lord, the Lord's anointed. And by that, right there in verse 16, you see the word Lord with a little L and the word Lord with a capital L? This little L is the one that means the master, owner, and the other one is the word for Yahweh. Here they are right together. See now where the king's spear is, and a jug of water at his head. And obviously he's making fun of the fact that he was right there in the camp, and no one saw him, and no one stopped him. Now, verse 17, and Saul recognized David's voice. This is very similar, chapter 24, verse 16. Very same thing happens. Is this your voice, my son David? And David said, it is my voice, my lord the king. And he also said, why then is my lord pursuing his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in my hand? David saying, why are you pursuing me? Well, I think the real problem was that David had these 600 men, started out with 400, had grown down to 600. Saul was afraid of him. Saul doesn't bring this up. But these David, being in the land with 600 men, caused a pretty... threat to this paranoid, mentally ill king. Look at verse 19. Now, therefore, please let my lord the king listen to the words of his servant. All right? I think chapter 16, 19, and chapter 27, verse 8, and I hope you'll look over there right now, is trying to do something I want to point out to you before I go any further. This was written about the rise of David to place of power in Israel. David wanted to make real sure that he was not caught in any way in being guilty for Saul's death, or doing anything evil to Saul, or doing anything to hurt the Israelis. And so 19 and 27 are attempting to show that David's time with the Philistines was caused by Saul, verse 19, chapter 26, and that while he was with the Philistines, he didn't hurt any of Israel's people. And that's what chapter 27, 8 is all about. I think it's the purpose of the author here. Therefore, please let my lord the king listen to my words. Number one, if the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. But if it is men, cursed are they before the Lord, for they have driven me today out, that I should have no attachment with the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. Now, this is kind of important. The first if the first reason that David puts forward why Saul should be pursuing him is that the Lord has caused it. Now, some commentators say that David's saying, if I've done something wrong, please forgive me and let's offer a sacrifice. I don't think that's at all what this is talking about. I think it's referring to that evil spirit of the Lord that came upon Saul back in chapter 16, verses 14 through 16. David's saying, Saul, you've done this because of your mental state. If you have, maybe you could offer a sacrifice and the Lord would help you get over this paranoia, depression. Number two, Saul, if there's some of your men that are bad-mouthing me to you that caused you to do this, may they be cursed by God, is the implication. Now, who could that have been? Well, it makes you wonder why David addressed Abner instead of Saul earlier in this chapter. And many have assumed that Abner was the anti-David person at court. We can't be sure of that because later on, Abner will come to David when he's king and David will accept him friendly. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but David thinks he has some enemies at court maybe, and probably from the Benjamite tribe. Now, it says they're running him away from the Lord's inheritance. What does that mean? Well, this is kind of the idea that the gods of the ancient world were geographical in nature. They controlled certain areas, and Yahweh had the promised land. You can see something of this thing in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 17, where Naaman takes some of the dirt from Palestine back to Syria so he can worship Yahweh. Something else here, when it says, David says, and serve other gods, the fact that he would be in the area of the Philistines and they were worshiping other gods and he would be away from Yahweh's temple. But why would David mention other gods? Wasn't he a monotheist? Didn't he believe in just one and only one God? Well, there's the hard question there. Some of the Psalms have a tremendous monotheistic kind of emphasis, even if it is just practical instead of philosophical monotheism. This seems to be more what we call henotheism, which means that although Yahweh was the only God for David, didn't mean that he didn't know or believe there were other gods out there. Some of this henotheism can be seen in Exodus 15:11 and Psalms 97:9, where the gods are mentioned. And it's obvious by the time of the 8th century prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah that full-blown monotheism is in place in Israel. There are no other gods but Yahweh. But this earlier part, I'm not real sure if that had developed, that had been revealed yet. Now at verse 20. Now then, do not let my blood fall to the ground away from the presence of the Lord, for the king of Israel has come out in search of a single flea. That sounds funny, doesn't it? Well, let me read you the Septuagint of this verse and listen how it differs a little bit. For the king of Israel has come forth to seek my life, as the night hawk pursues its prey in the mountains. Now, my New American Standard has, in search of a single flea, just as one hunts partridge in the mountains. What's the difference in the Septuagint and the Masoretic text? This single flea, many have translated it flea because there's so many parallels between chapter 26 and 24. And David refers himself as a flea in chapter 24, 14. Maybe because of its hardness to catch or whatever, we're not sure. Now, what about this partridge, or should it be a nighthawk? Well, a partridge is a bird. It's kind of, I don't know if you've been quail hunting here or partridge hunting up in the mountains. They kind of stick to cover until you're right up on top of them. And then they may fly a little bit, but their usual means is to run on the ground. And in the ancient world, they would chase these partridges until they were just wore out and they could catch them very easily. Maybe David's saying, that's what you're doing to me, Saul. You're chasing me over and over and over. You're going to wear me out and catch me. Why are you chasing me? And there's a real play on the partridge, meaning the caller, and David calling to him, and Abner answering, who is it who calls, back in verse 14. Now what David may be saying in verse 20 is, Saul, are you going to even chase me in the Philistine area? Are you going to pursue me once I leave the country? Because I don't want to be pursued by you and get killed away from the inheritance of the Lord, away from the promised land. I think it's his way of saying, Saul, don't run, chase me anymore. I'm going to leave, Saul. We learned that from chapter 29:1. I'm going to leave, but just don't chase me, seems to be the implication. Now, 21. And Saul said, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will not harm you again, because my life was precious in your sight this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have committed a serious error. I think Saul really meant this. This sounds very sincere to me. I grant you, it's very similar to chapter 24, verses 16 through 22. Saul had already said something even stronger than this and reneged on it. The problem was Saul had these mental fits. They would come on him, and he'd be irrational and violent. But when they left, he'd be normal. And when he was normal, he could think clearly. I think he did have a sense of repentance. I think he did care about David. I think he did love God when he was rational. But oh my, when he was unrational, he was a tricky devil, and David couldn't trust him. And David answered and said, "Behold the spear of the king. Let now one of your young men come over here and take it." He wants to give the spear back, the symbol of Saul's kingship, or a symbol of Saul's anger. That's exactly what he tried to use to kill David. "And the Lord will repay each man," now this is very similar to chapter 24, verse 19, "for his righteousness and faithfulness. For the Lord delivered you into my hand today, but I refuse to stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed." Now this term seems to refer to conformity to a standard, this word righteousness and faithfulness. David is speaking about himself. He's saying, you know, Saul, I'm being as trustworthy to God as I know how to be. I'm trying to keep his word and his will, even though it personally costs me a danger. Saul, God's going to bless me because of that. I've been fair with you, Saul. You have not been fair with me. Now, the word righteous is an interesting word. It's a relationship term. Saul had not been fair to David. David had been fair to God, and because of that, he'd been fair to Saul. The word righteousness comes from a measuring reed, R-E-E-D. It's about 15 to 20 feet long. It was the straightest plant in the Mesopotamian area where this metaphor comes from. And they used it to measure the horizontal straightness of buildings. They used a plumb line for the vertical straightness and this measuring reed. God took it as a metaphor of his own character and his own nature, that he is righteous or just. Both come from the same root. And the word faithfulness here is trustworthy. That's the idea. Now, verse 24. "Now, behold, as your life was highly valued in my sight this day, so may my life be highly valued in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me from all distress." Now, what David's saying is, Saul, I don't trust you. I spared your life, and I'm hoping God, not you, God is going to spare my life because I spared you. I'm acting faithful to God as I understand him, Saul. You're acting unfaithful to both God and to me. That's the idea here. Now, verse 25, is Saul speaking again in the same kind of, I think, very rational, very humble way as verse 21. "Then Saul said to David, 'Blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and surely prevail.'" Now, what does that mean? Well, it's not as strong as chapter 24, verses 20 and 21, where Saul actually says, "David, you're going to be my successor. You're going to be king one day. That's God's will." This is not that strong. It may be that since Saul made that statement, some of the other Benjamite brothers had gotten nervous, so he never says that again. Matter of fact, what he really seems to say is, "David, I hope you do good in anything and everything that you try, except becoming king. Now, David, you can come home, back to Israel. I won't harm you, but you don't try to be king anymore." That's the standard. Now, that may be the implication of this. I'm just not sure. If it is, then David has the choice of giving up his sense of divine call, the anointing of Samuel, for his personal safety. And, of course, he can't do that. So he's going to flee to the Philistines. Others say, no, this verse 25 means exactly opposite of that. It does relate to chapter 24, verses 20 and 21. It is saying that David will be king someday. It's just in a little different language, not quite as definite, not quite as strong. And so I think you can take the opposite view from this same verse. Either Saul is reaffirming, much like he did in 24, or he's saying, "David, I've kind of changed the rules of the game. You can come back, but you can't plan on being king." Now, which it is, I'm not real sure. But David is going to make up his mind from this point on to flee the land of Israel. He is not going to stay. He realizes that Saul can't be trusted, this mental illness, this paranoia, this schizophrenia, this manic depressant comes on this man, and he can't be trusted. He even acts violently toward the priest and Nob, toward his own family, tried to kill David twice at court, and though he made a deal and said, "I'm sorry, I won't chase you anymore," here he is chasing him again. It's obvious that Saul's the irrational, violent person, and David will have to leave his country. But it breaks his heart. He feels like he's leaving his religious faith in some ways. He feels like he's been forced to go with the pagan gods in some way. And I think we're going to see the pain involved in that in our study next week of chapter 27 and 28. Well, I've really enjoyed being with you. I think you ought to see the main thrust of this is that David is trying to explain why he went to the Philistines and that he never did any harm to Israelites is part of this whole setting here. Well, I've enjoyed being with you. I hope you have a great day. And please pray for me as I study. And thank you for watching us week by week. And I just hope the Lord blesses you real good. Have a good day.